except that one, to tell someone that they're wrong. How do we do that then? Now, I would pose, just as we're going to see today, just as we heard in Sunday school class with Paul, I would propose oftentimes asking questions is the way to actually begin a conversation of what matters. Because sometimes the questions themselves lead to places that we're wanting to talk to that we just can't get any other way in our modern culture. Oftentimes I look to the past for help and wisdom. Here's one example. Yes, it's my favorite bishop, J.C. Ryle. He writes of a time when a man was addressing a crowd, and he was trying to persuade them that there was no God, no devil, no heaven, no hell, no resurrection, no judgment, no life to come. He thought that this was important enough, that he wanted everyone to set aside all these quaint notions of religion and faith. No more of that. And so his advice to those who were listening was that they should throw away their Bibles and ignore their pastors. In the middle of his speech, as Ryle tells it, a poor older woman kind of pushed her way through the crowd, and she stood before him, and at the opportune moment, she said this. She said, "Sir, are you happy?" Well, the speaker looked scornfully at her, but he gave no answer. "Who is this who's interrupting me?" But she pressed on. "Sir," she said again, I ask you to answer my question. Are you happy? You want us to throw away our Bibles. You tell us not to believe what our pastors say. You advise us to think as you do and to be like you. Well, before we take your advice, we have a right to know. We want to know what good we shall get from what you have said. Do your fine new notions give you comfort? Do you yourself truly feel happy?" The man proceeded to hem and haw, but refused to give a clear answer. Eventually, he slunk away. You know, the lady in the story, I think, provides a number of teachable moments for us. Number one, notice that she doesn't have all the answers. She doesn't sit and try to, you know, argue against some sort of view of the world. She's not bringing out Greek philosophy. She's not doing any of that. She's just asking a very simple, practical, yet important question. Right? Many folks these days seek to influence you and I. They seek to tell us, don't believe this, don't do that. Oh, that's old hat. No one thinks that anymore. What's wrong with you people? You know, get with the days. Many folks try to tell us the best ways to live. It can be hard to understand, can't it be? Whether it's from, not that I read these, but I hear these days, apparently, especially if you're a mom, apparently every blog has a different way of parenting, and that you better do this, otherwise you're ruining your kids forever, and you're this terrible mother. And I haven't seen that come to the guys yet, but I'm sure it is coming. Right? Certainly we've all seen this with regard to health. Oh, don't eat this. Oh, wait, no, you should eat that. Don't listen to those scientists. They're wrong. And make sure you do this. Don't eat that one, though. Right? We get all this confusing advice all the time. Wouldn't it be great if someone would just cut through it and help us to think clearly? You know, that happened to me recently after my short stint as a star football player. As I was sitting there in urgent care learning about my broken rib, the nurse, in all wonderful compassion, said to me, "You know, I see that the 31st was your birthday." I said, "Yeah." She said, "Why on earth did you break a rib on your birthday?" And you know, she's probably right. Maybe I should take up something else, competitive marble playing or something. I don't know. Right? But her point, though, I mean, as much as she just, you know, kind of say, no, 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 you don't need to follow what Peter has said or what he has taught. No, our way is better. Don't you want to just live it up and enjoy life now? Isn't that more wonderful? Why do all this other stuff? Right? They're seeking to challenge not only what Peter taught, but ultimately what Jesus taught. This is why I so often say, brothers and sisters, that our modern era is actually not modern at all. It's very much like we've gone back to the first century. Competing ideas, competing philosophies, very little idea of what really is right or wrong. How do you cut through that? We need some skills, and Peter's going to give us some practice today. I'd say we cut through it by asking questions. So it is here. We're going to get a little bit of practice in asking questions in our passage today so that then we would be better equipped to ask questions of our world. Instead of just taking for granted that, oh, well, there's this new movement that everyone says is good and popular, it must be true. Instead, we can start asking, okay, is it? If that's really the case, then you seem still so upset all the time. If this really promotes, take your pick, joy and happiness and acceptance or some sort of justice, then how come it seems like those who promote it are the exact opposite? Help me understand. Questions, friends, that we need to learn how to ask. So if you're not already there, why don't you turn? It's very near the end of your Bible. The last book's actually 2 Peter. We pick up at the end of chapter 2, starting with verse 17. So 2 Peter, right? There's a lot of twos going on here. 2 Peter, find chapter 2. Those are the big numbers. And the little numbers of the verses will be in verse 17. And what Peter's going to do is he's going to give us three observations about these false teachers and what they're doing and what they're promoting. In our sense, I think we can take these as three questions that we could ask. Our first is going to be, what do they promise and what do they deliver? Right? What do they promise and what do they deliver? This really is, in Ryle's story, the question of the lady oh so long ago. It's, well, you say to give up all this. Okay, but what do we gain? What's the point? Why should we? Just because it's popular, not just someone smart says it, but why should we? Look with me at verse 17. Speaking of these false teachers, here's what Peter writes. These are waterless springs and mists driven by a storm. For them the gloom of utter darkness has been reserved. Right? And what Peter's doing is he's using this imagery here that promises much but delivers nothing. So here's the context. Remember, context always matters. That's true for everything. I'm sure some of you have, at some point or another, had someone take your words out of context. They've gotten you wrong. They've tried to say that you were meaning something you didn't. So just as that happens to you, and we don't want that. We don't want that with the scriptures either. Here's the context. Peter is continuing to talk about the difference of these false prophets versus what Jesus says, versus what Jesus has taught and Peter has carried on. And his ultimate summary of their way of life is to say, hey, there's a huge difference here. The lifestyle that they're promoting and practicing is one like a spring without water, a storm that brings no rain. Right? It promises much. It promises sustenance, or perhaps if you're in a dry place, life even. You need that water. If you're the farmer, it's promising growth, right, for the crops. All these promises, and yet the reality is it delivers on none of those things. It's Peter's summary. That's his answer to the question, is they're not delivering. This is something that we think and we see all throughout our lives, isn't it? Think carefully about resort who drives the, you know, the pickup truck out in the mountains. And somehow the truck's never dirty, I've noticed. But, you know, down the mountain road, you're adventurous. You're rough. And usually as the, you know, the guy steps out of the truck, he's got that oh-so-trendy kind of, you know, stubble beard and plaid going on. Is that you? Right? Or perhaps it's the, I don't see as many of these lately, but, you know, if it's for, you know, some sort of European car, it's, you know, sophistication. They're always going to some, you know, swanky party club thing, and it's, oh, this is you. What does any of that have to do with a car? Nothing. But that's what they're selling. They're selling you an idea, not a substance. Your choice of companies to spend money with these days, it's not about a product anymore, right? It's about your politics, your social decisions. Is your coffee sourced from a fair trade cooperative? Oh, because you're a terrible person if it's not. It's interesting. Right, take Coke commercials or beer commercials, if you will. Notice they never sell the product. They're always selling a certain lifestyle. Oh, you know, drink this and you'll be attractive. You'll have fun. Life will be exciting every moment. And yet, I want you to notice in these examples, they all have something in common. None of them actually deliver what they promise. Right? No amount of drinking Coca-Cola is going to make you prettier. If you haven't figured that out yet, I'm sorry, but that's the reality. No amount of me going out and buying the really cool SUV is going to make me, you know, this rugged Western manliness sort of thing. That's just not how life works. No carefully curated social media profile is going to cause you to be someone different than you actually are. Substance versus promise. And that's what we're seeing here, isn't it? These false teachers, they're promising much. They're given a great marketing spiel, we might say. And yet they themselves don't practice what they promise. They don't actually have anything to offer that's lasting, that leads to the genuine good life. They look good, the marketing's slick, but it's all a veneer. It's a mile wide and an inch deep, as you might say. And so what is Peter's warning? Well, ultimately, as we've been seeing all throughout, it's don't fall for it. Right? What they're heading toward is, verse 17, you know, the gloom of utter darkness. They're going toward judgment no matter how well they make that road look. I was once hiking in a state park, and I had come to an intersection that was not marked. It wasn't on my map. And it was interesting because, you know, the trail I was on seemed fairly obvious, but this other one, it looked like a real trail. It actually looked in some ways nicer, smoother, better paved. And so I started hiking down it. And I didn't go more than about 100 meters until it literally ended in a drop-off about 50 yards up over a lake. And it looked good, but it didn't go anywhere helpful. Maybe a scenic photo point, I guess. I certainly wasn't about to just step off the end there. But that's how it is here. Peter's saying, don't fall for the hype. Just because something looks good, just because big promises are given, doesn't mean you should just uncritically receive it. Oh, well, hey, it sounds good. Sign me up. All the more so when it comes to our spiritual lives. Just because the new book comes out, the new popular speaker comes through town, the new thing is promoted on the radio, that doesn't necessarily mean it's faithful or good. What should you and I do? We should ask questions. What hearts with lust. They promise no restraints. Doesn't that sound oddly modern, by the way? Go back to our example of advertising. What does almost every advertisement tap into today? With almost no exceptions, it's money, sex, and power. Right? These are the things that the marketers try to woo us toward. And frankly, it's not just them. That in religion as well, ultimately. And that's exactly what these false teachers were offering oh so long ago. Right? You can almost update it for modern times, right? You know, don't worry about that, you know, whole, you know, one man married to one woman for life thing. That's so restricting. That's so old-fashioned. You know, let us tell you the new way for happiness. You deserve more. You should, you know, do this for yourself. No one's going to hand it to you. Right? Follow your dreams. Take that over-the-top vacation. Get that completely impractical car, that mansion of the house, or, to use the title of a movie, go ahead and supersize that Happy Meal. You've earned it. Really? You've earned it? Is that really leading to the good life? Judging you for supersizing whatever, but right, have you noticed that so often we're sold something that actually is not good for us, and it's not even true? Right, look at the method. What are they appealing to? What do they want from you? Is it genuinely good, or is it they want to make a buck? You know, a mature Christian, as Peter hints at here, might well be able to resist the allure of this kind of thinking. You know, see it for what it is, discern, and say, yeah, I know where that's going. That's nowhere good. And yet, Peter points out that ultimately those newer in the faith, or perhaps even simply those whose defenses have been worn down, right? You've all been there. I've been there. You know, the cares of the world, a weak moment, grind of this life, this can easily lead to a fall into such unfaithful and self-centered sorts of dreaming. But to point out another danger of this kind of thinking, it becomes all too easy, for example, picking on marketers, let's talk about churches. It's all too easy to find a church whose primary draw is simply that they're inoffensive. Pick a body of believers not based on what they believe, how they follow Jesus, but instead one that's based on preferences. Oh, do they check this box? Do they, you know, just like you might go to Walmart and pick out shampoo. Oh, this one looks good. It smells okay. Price it. Check, check, check. Right, is that what we're going to fall into, brothers and sisters? Peter says, beware. That leads nowhere good. When it comes to things that last forever, we need to do a lot better than just, yeah, what fits my preferences, what spiritual shampoo is best for me. So notice then Peter's warning. This kind of living, this kind of believing, this kind of method and influence, it leads nowhere good. It's false. It's empty. It's like one of those behind-the-scenes interviews. Have you ever seen these? Sometimes they'll come back around to someone who's won the lottery, for example. And you know a common theme that I've noticed? Their life is almost never better. Shockingly, it's usually worse. And yet that's not what we're sold, is it? It's, oh, win the lottery and all your dreams will come true. they don't have. In this, they are not so different from a drug dealer.
They promise the good life. It's the high life.
But their own life is an absolute wreck. Why would you believe them when their own example is so empty? And Peter's point, his challenge, is simply to say this. Open your eyes. Look. Ask questions. What's really going on? Versus just what's the, you know, the loud, flashy marketing copy here. One more point. This one comes in verse 20. And ultimately, we need to see that at the core of a lot of these things, there's a fatal flaw. There's an assumption. There's an underlying problem that we'll see if only we care to look. So it's, what do you see? Will you look? Will you think? For if, after they have escaped the defilements of the world through the knowledge of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, they are again entangled in them and overcome, the last state has become worse for them than the first. And so notice the fatal flaw. The lifestyle of all unfaithful spiritual influencers is this. They're going nowhere that you and I would want to follow. Notice there's a danger here. At one point, these prophets were not false. Did you catch that? They seem to have some sort of knowledge of what is true. And yet that all changed. This is not a case of people having genuine faith and falling away. But instead, the point's very different. It's that they learned about Jesus and then have rejected Jesus. Right? They had knowledge, but not genuine belief. They knew exactly what they were turning against. And in that sense, then, their state is worse off than when they began. It's not just ignorance that's their problem. It's ultimately, oh yeah, we know about this Jesus guy, and we're not going to follow him. And it's a whole different kind of hardness of heart. Not that God can't still save, of course he can. Peter says this is a massive danger. So sit up and take notice, friends. Right? To the one who has been given much, much will be required. There's a challenge here for everyone. What are you doing with the knowledge of Jesus? What are you doing with the knowledge of Christ? Are you following him? Are you trusting him? Or do you just file it away? Oh, that's nice. Kind of agree, kind of don't, that's fine. Right? Peter's point is this, if that's what you're doing, beware. Beware, knowledge that is not applied, knowledge that is just simply set aside, can turn into a curse just as easily as anything else. Unapplied knowledge is not neutral. In fact, it can be a dangerous and condemning thing if not applied for God's glory. That's why Peter ultimately points out this sad reality. Contrary to what these teachers promoted, their very lifestyle shows that turning from Jesus did not lead to freedom, to joy, to happiness. Nothing of the sort. You don't have to look far to see the same thing happening in our own culture. Right? Those who seem to cry out the loudest for their own choices and freedoms and kind of a let go of everything culture also seem to be some of the most miserable. And it turns out that God's laws are actually a good thing for humanity. That following the Lord is actually the way to human flourishing and life and joy. Rejecting him, just as Paul says in Romans, leads to death. And it always has. This was the truth that God said even back to Adam and Eve in Genesis. Finally, then, one other picture you might give, and it's, what is their nature? What is the essence of this? Verses 21 and 22. For it would have been better for them never to have known the way of righteousness than, after knowing it, to turn back from the holy commandment delivered to them. What the true proverb says has happened to them. The dog returns to its own vomit. Sow, after washing herself, returns to wallow in the mire. What is the nature of what doesn't really bring freedom or love or a happy life. And instead, the imagery is pretty disgusting, isn't it? It's tragic. A dog going back to its vomit. A pig going back into the mud. In Jewish thinking, dogs and pigs are not at all like what we think. Pigs were unclean, sadly, not even fit to be eaten. Sorry for those of you who like bacon, right? They were just seen as that worthless, that pointless. Dogs were not your cute little friendly Fido. Dogs were actually seen, you know, think more of like a wild junkyard dog, you know, something that's a menace. No one kept dogs as pets. That's the idea that Peter wants to get across here. These are to be looked down upon. Peter says that these teachers then are like those despised animals. What they offer is not actually resulting in what they're promising. And that's a good point for us to end on. Right? Whenever somebody comes along trumpeting the new thing to be outraged by, the new thing to reject in Christianity, the new way of thinking, which all this is really an old way of thinking, about how everything in our faith is wrong and they've discovered the new hidden secret. But whenever that happens, you need to be asking yourself these questions. Does this person's life make their ideas look good or true? And are they actually leading to anywhere I want to go? Is there any kind of abiding truth in this? Will this give me comfort when tragedy strikes? Or is it all just a veneer? Is it all just pie in the sky, trying to make me feel good for the moment before the next thing comes along? Right? Look closely, look carefully. Ultimately, what Jesus has said will stand those tests. Everything else will not. Not the lies of our world, not the deceptions of folks trying to tell you something, not the so-called freedom of choose your own adventure spirituality. No. What will last is hope in Christ. Eternal joy is to be with Jesus forever. But have you ever wondered why in our current culture, it's about every year there's a new thing, right? It might be a new way to live, a new restraint to cast off, a new product that will change everything, a new philosophy of health or eating or wellness. Have you know, there's always something new. And one of the things that I've noticed, you've probably noticed this too, is that you're supposed to have amnesia over whatever last year's thing was. You know, it was like, oh wait, we're not supposed to realize, hey, that didn't work. Maybe this whole idea isn't going anywhere. No, you're supposed to think, ooh, wait, here's a new